providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Welcome back. Continuing to listen to the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. I am chatting with John Kaiser in this segment. John is the founder of Kaiser Research Online. And John, you focus a lot on junior stocks, but in a broad sense, also the resource markets. Let's start off with a broad comment on the resource markets, especially when it comes to the junior stocks, is that there still doesn't seem to be this audience rushing into the gold sector, even after this breakout. Now, this is a technical breakout, and I know some of the larger stocks have been doing better, something that we talked about even at the early part of last month, but in a broad sense, still, again, I think investors are very distracted by other markets. What do you think, though? This technical breakout doesn't seem, at least right now, to be enough to drive people into the markets. What's it going to take?
You know, it's really frustrating. We see gold go over 1,400, challenge 1,450. It's the highest it's been since 2013. It sort of falls back below 1,400 when it looks like the trade war between China and the United States is going to be put on pause. And it's crept back above 1,400 in the last couple days. But there is very little, if any, a follow-through in the resource junior sectors, including optionality plays. For example, Midas Gold, they had to do a $20 million financing at 60 cents to keep everything, the permitting cycle in Idaho for the Stibnite mine going. But it's like limping along at 62, 64 cents, even though gold at over $1,400 with the reduction in the federal tax corporate tax rate last year, it should be starting to track, develop an uptrend. And at $1,600, which seems like merely a couple hundred bucks away, that stock should be doing really well. So I think the audiences that traditionally look at the juniors, the optionality, and the expiration plays, they do not believe that this move in gold is part of a sustainable trend. I think we need to see a sustained trend and an underlying logic as to why this trend will continue to carry on before we see the audiences feel comfortable to buy these optionality juniors and bet on exploration companies.
So, John, what about, too, that whole aspect of maybe an exploration company going out there and finding something major in a different jurisdiction? What has been running recently? We look at stuff like Great Bear Resources. That's in Canada, a well-known area in Ontario. We look at even now a little bit of a bidding war going on in Quebec over Alexandria Minerals. However, that stock, which I chatted about earlier in the week, that was kind of run into the ground by that management team. But at least there is a bidding war. And there are still stocks in Mexico that are getting a bid. How could maybe a bigger discovery in a new area also help this sector?
Well, traditionally a big discovery that's like world class, in other words, is worth $1 billion plus, has excited the market and brought in lots of audiences. But I'm beginning to wonder if a single discovery by a junior can actually do that. And we had our example in early 2016 with Arizona Mining. It was 35 cents. It had come up with this deposit that was open pitable that really didn't work and was never going to get permitted. And then they drilled deeper and got really high grade zinc, lead, silver deposit. And 2 years later, they're bought out at $6.20 and a $2.1 billion cash buyout by South 32. And that really did nothing to inspire any other activity in Arizona where the project was located or in general. What we need, earlier in this year, I was pretty excited about the James Bay. This is in central Quebec. It's an area where there's been a fair amount of work in the past 20 years with the Eleanor discovery. And here was the potential for a new copper system of the sort not known for this region, and if it turned out to be world class, it was something nobody had ever really looked for. And all of a sudden, these juniors, which accidentally owned claims for completely different different reasons, they would be in potentially in the money. So we need a big discovery that changes the thinking for an area, and we're suddenly companies that people are stuck in for reasons that haven't, you know, worked out well, are suddenly back in the game, and there's excitement, and you don't know who's going to be the winner coming out of that. That's called a discovery-based area play. But for things like Great Bear, that has possibility for reviving that whole Red Lake district, because, you know, everybody assumes, okay, Goldcorp found this new high-grade gold aspect to a supposedly depleted system, that they owned all the ground, and there's a little bit more found around it. But if you hopped a little farther, such as the Dixie, well, there was gold mineralization there, but it was of a different kind, and it didn't really work out. And now everybody's thinking, is this going to be something new? Have they found similar to Red Lake, and it's going to grow big? But the market needs to see, like a Great Bear, not just go to $4 and then, you know, find 1 million ounces and get absorbed by Newmont Goldcorp to add to their facility, but to suddenly go to $20-$30 because it suddenly has 5 to 10 million ounces of high grade. And that does not happen overnight. That's the problem with these discovery plays. They do have a 6 to 12 month validation cycle from the initial holes that suggest there is a discovery. And I really don't see much out there right now where I can say, this is going to lead to a revival of exploration interest in juniors.
Yeah, in all fairness too, John, we've seen some of the recent discoveries even be faded by the markets. You bring up a good point that discoveries do take a long time to prove out and even prove initially outside of just one or two holes, but it's something we have seen where one or two holes can move the stock, and then as more holes are released that might not be as good or might be as good as those first few holes, the stock has been generally getting faded. There are some limited examples of stocks that kept running, but overall that money just is not flying in. One part of the sector that is doing really well is the royalty and streaming companies, though. Do you think these guys almost are being used as an ETF, and some of the larger money and also some of the speculators who are done playing single stocks are just focusing on this area?
Well, the royalty and streaming companies became popular because you had all these projects heading into production, and the gold price went down, but the costs didn't. And so you had questions about, how profitable are the producers themselves going to be? But a royalty is right off the top. The costs don't matter. And as long as they want to keep this operation going, the royalty company will benefit. And of course, if gold does start going up, there will be a leveraged impact on the producer, whom the market will be pricing pretty negatively based on actual cash flow. You know, the difference between the gold price and the all-in sustaining cost per ounce. But the immediate go-to would be the streaming royalty company. And of course, the GLD ETF, insofar as you want to have a play just on the direction of the gold price. So the depressing thing with the example of like Midas Gold is the market has lost interest in betting on the actual companies as a proxy for gold, and that really needs to change. I don't think the streaming companies really are a threat. They're, you know, more for the institutional audience, which right now is completely absent because they need a clear trend in place to go pile into the resource sector, period. And retail, they've been distracted by momentum trades such as cannabis, where you don't have to worry about cost because everything costs a ton of money. Nothing makes any money, but it's all about the winner take all sort of .com type revival. You know, 20 years later, now we have it in the cannabis space, with the entire world eventually going to legalize and become a market for all these wannabe cannabis and cannabis derivative product future producers.
Well, that's one of the big distractions that continues to be. And you know what? It is more attracting some of those younger investors because it's a different market. It is a growing sector in terms of potential legalization. Plus, stocks have already given a lot of gains to some investors. John, you recently wrote up a stock, though, that I was surprised when you wrote it up, but it's a stock that I hold. That's Rugby Mining. They just kind of lost the permit, or they didn't get a permit in Colombia and have shifted focus to a property in the Philippines, which, from my understanding, they will be drilling soon. Why write up Rugby now?
Well, I'm, you know, the Kaiser Research Online, with its spec value rating system, has a category called bottom fish. And bottom fish are companies where there's a, you know, management team or at least a project that's interesting. The company's not bankrupt, you know, a zombie company with negative working capital and going to be rolled back or anything. And I look for these companies and I spotlight them as bottom fish. And I've had Rugby as a bottom fish off and on in the past 7-8 years. Exeter was a former recommendation that did extremely well. It went as high as $9 in 2010 with the Caspiche and their spin out Extori Gold with the El Moro gold silver discovery in Argentina. It went to almost $15 in 2011, and they both got bought out subsequently at lower valuations. But these were exploration successes delivered by that team, Bryce Roxburgh, Paul Joyce, and Yale Simpson. And so these guys are serial discovery makers. And Rugby was this sort of, okay, when these other things are gone, this will be our plan C, where we get something going. And, you know, I'd kind of given up on the company. They've raised $20 million in the last 8 years, and they have maybe 1.2 million left, and they didn't really accomplish anything. So you kind of think, if these guys lost their touch. But part of the problem was in late 2010, when they started to focus on this, they secured two project deals, one in the Philippines, which they call the Motherlode, and the other in Colombia called Cobrasco. And both of them suddenly turned into endless frustration, because in the case of the Motherlode, some sort of license had expired that needed to be renewed, and they couldn't drill on the property itself. And they finally got their license in January this year. This is like 7 years later, but they couldn't do anything with this project. And Cobrasco in Colombia, they did all the right stuff. And then in April, they got the bad news that the forestry department in Colombia was not going to allow any work in this so-called Choco Copper Porphyry Belt. And so 7 years of waiting for nothing. But with the Motherlode project, it's an old vein that was mined out in 37 to 1953 for the mill burnt down. It probably goes deeper. They believe, or they even have evidence, that it sits on top of a copper gold porphyry system, and that these are sort of high sulfidation epithermal veins radiating from it. And on this island of Mindanao of the Philippines, they have these smallish max 200 million ton copper porphyry deposits that are enriched in copper and gold. And it's not a good place to try and open pit stuff. So you need the higher grade to do some underground block caving type of activity. Well, this company I wrote up because Yale Simpson picked up the phone and said, you know, John, I need to update you on Rugby. We finally have this project that we've been waiting for forever, ready to drill. And so I researched it. We went through it and looked at the story. And it's a simple two-hole program. The first hole will twin an old hole that an Australian company did way back in 2005, and it'll give them the core to properly log it and understand what's going on at depth, and they'll test both the deeper part of the vein system to see what's left there, and go right into the porphyry target at the base, where they have something the Australians didn't have, which was an IP survey. And what it showed was two chargeability highs: the one that sits right underneath the vein, and then a little bit offset to the south, another one, which has them thinking, oh, there's a fault here that has moved this whole system. There could be another 600-700 meters of high-grade vein off to the south. So they'll drill the second hole into this. And, you know, I wrote this up and nothing happened. So these guys who are a proven discovery exploration team, rolling up their sleeves, picking up the phone, telling people we are going to start doing this. You know that first hole is going to have something good in it. They've spent the last 4 or 5 years on looking at other projects around the world. Who knows what they have their eyes on that they could put into this company. And it just sits there. And that's the problem. And this is why if you believe that gold is going to get a sustained uptrend over the next 12 months and bring back the audiences, you have these incredibly cheap little companies. Yes, 100 million shares outstanding, but it's at 15 cents. That's a $15, $20 million valuation for a project that could end up being worth substantially more. You can go in there and buy this stuff quite readily in the market. So at the one hand, I'm totally depressed that everything just sits here. But the other hand, I tell myself, you have to keep slugging away. There are many little companies like Rugby Mining that are really cheap, good teams on board, stories that are interesting. And in this case, they picked up a portfolio from Barrick in Colombia with a bunch of pending applications. Barrick blew $20 million in Colombia before giving up on the country as useless in terms of getting permits for anything. So these guys, if they on this other batch of stuff start getting permits, they could be finally working in Colombia also, where there's an enormous amount of potential that because of the difficulties in that country have never really been tapped. So I'm pretty bullish about the opportunities out there, but I'm sort of wondering when is this gold trend going to happen that really brings the audiences back.
Yeah, so more of this guarded bullishness. You're not alone there, John, because of the fact I think that the market has been just so tough. But now that we finally got a break in gold, it's just waiting to find finally something to happen for these juniors that I know a lot of us and our listeners are invested in, because there are still some good stories out there that just haven't moved and have continued actually to drift lower. John, great chatting with you. Thanks for taking some time on this weekend and sharing a new company that you wrote up, plus also your thoughts on what it might take to bring people, a broad base of investors, back into the sector. John, have a great rest of your weekend, buddy.
You too, Corey.